Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 452 for comics originally released on April 6th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Bloodlines number 1. This is part 1 of 6. It is written by, J.T. Krule, and we've got art by Kenneth Marion, I believe. I'm doing that off the solicits, and yes, that is correct. Sometimes I remember to check this ahead of time. This time I didn't. This is, the original Bloodline stuff was an event of sorts in the 1993 annuals, and yes, I looked up the year. And the basic idea was there were a bunch of alien parasites that killed humans, a couple survived, and they got superpowers. And a couple of those characters had some solo titles, but only one was particularly successful. So I don't know how many people, if any, were really begging for these characters to make a comeback. And this continues to have me wondering, as I mentioned with the Sugar and Spike stuff a few weeks ago, it's almost like DC is actively trying not to create brand new characters. So, again, these aren't bad characters per se, but they were not ones that just have, as far as I could tell, a huge following of, geez, they're brilliant, bring them back. Did you read any of the original Bloodline stuff?
You know, I have most of those. From dollar bins and things, and I don't know if I've read any of them. I don't remember them if I did.
Okay, great. That was the answer I was hoping for. Did this, which is a 6-issue miniseries, we got the first issue here, did this make any sense to you?
Sure.
Okay, interesting. I thought it was a lot of setup and not particularly great setup. I didn't think, I felt that if I hadn't known the concept from the annuals back in the day, I'd have been a little confused as to what was going on here. But you're saying you understood it and you were good.
90% of it, nothing really happened that you need to understand until the end.
There is that. Okay.
There's only a page or two where there's something that occurs where you might want some explanation, but it's right there at the end, so I'm assuming there'll be some exposition next issue that gives me that backstory on how this occurred and why.
Essentially, what happened there with Eddie?
Yeah. Why did he turn into what he turned into, and how long has he been fighting that? Has that happened before? You know, that sort of thing. It was up to that point. It was just all origin story to me, and all leading up. Establishing the character, his close-knit group, family, friends, etc. And there was really nothing to understand until I got to the end, I didn't think.
Okay, that's a fair take on it. That's we get a opening scene that kind of has a meteor crashing and presumably is what's causing the whole story to happen. You know, we then get an introduction to Eddie, who's kind of our lead character. What got me with there is, well, we get to know his family and his status quo a little bit. We don't really get a good explanation for his status quo. He's got, like, crutches, but it's like, okay, something's wrong with him, but I'm not sure what. You know, there's reference to bad DNA, and I don't know if that's literal or just, I don't know. It was confusing. What follows after that really didn't work for me because we get a couple of characters. We get this one girl who's a blogger, and I'm like, I don't even know her name and why she matters to the story.
Yeah, she was awful.
We get this mom and daughter or whatever. It's like, well, what do they matter? What's up with this Haley at the auto shop or whatever? We get these two cops. What's up with them? I mean, we get introduced to a lot of characters, but none of them seem to have any major pertinence to the story. And then we get back to Eddie, and it's like, oh, now the story's going again.
Yeah, and the art is such that the way he was drawn early on, I thought he was a girl. And then when she referred to him as Eddie, I thought, was that short for like Edwina or something? And then as I turned the page, he's got his hat on backwards and he's going out, and I'm like, oh, okay, he's a guy. But he was drawn very I don't know. I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell. I thought, oh, is
interesting.
That girl?
I yeah. didn't have that problem, but okay. A lot of this issue was left to the imagination, I think. You know, again, the bit at the end where we really get kind of the stuff harkening back to the original Bloodline stuff. No real explanation as to what's going on. It's a completely different version of the character. Not so much there are aspects of the character that are very different than what we'd gotten originally. Nothing right or wrong about that. It makes this very definitely derivative or whatever, but new as well. It's weird. I just felt like there was so much of this left out of the issue that, I mean, what's here isn't necessarily bad, but I felt like I had to read a lot into this to kind of, for me to understand what I think they were trying to do. And for a 6-issue limited series, we're 1/6 of the way through. I felt there should have been more here other than just almost a teaser to the story.
Yeah, they better get on with it because, I mean, you know, it was a good origin story for the deer, the rabid deer or whatever, mutated. You know, we kind of see where it came from, but we don't really know how, if Eddie's affected by the same phenomenon. I mean, his eyes are the same, so I'm assuming so, but I didn't see any of that, and they didn't tell me any of that, so I just have to kind of guess and connect the dots somehow that something happened. Something happened similar to what happened to the deer, and that's why he is the way he is. But I hope we find out quickly.
Yeah.
Or are we going to find out, is that going to be the driving force of the whole thing? We're just going to explore these powers without ever really finding out where they came from.
Is the whole thing just the setup for a bunch of...
Yeah.
I hesitate to use the term new characters. Because they're not new. As a matter of fact, I think this character has even appeared in the New 52 before, maybe. I was a little unclear from that, from the research I did on... granted, I've read all the stuff. I can't keep all this straight. This isn't a group of characters that I felt needed to come back. Like I said, there was only one that was particularly successful. And it wouldn't surprise me if you've actually read some of this character. Are you familiar with Hitman?
The Garth Ennis thing?
Yeah, 60-issue run or whatever.
Yeah.
That was the successful Bloodlines character.
Oh, wow.
There were a few others. Gunfire, Anima. There were a few others. Let's leave it at that, I guess. I can't even remember what they all were. A lot of them were very... Argus, I think, was one of them. Forgettable is a good word. And again, they weren't bad, but it was a very forced, ooh, let's create new characters, which makes this all the more ironic when it feels like this is a clear attempt for DC to not create new characters.
What do you want from them, John? Do you want them to resurrect old characters and put a new spin on it, or do you want new characters created?
I don't think it's an either or, and there's nothing wrong with bringing old characters back without putting a new spin on them. But you look at the entire history of the New 52, we're going on about 5 years now,
mm-hmm.
and how many brand new characters have they introduced? In terms of heroes and stuff like that.
Let's see, there's, we got the Court of Owls. Yeah. Talon.
Talon and the Court of Owls, some of that I was thinking, and maybe incorrectly so, predated the New 52.
Nope, Batman 1.
Okay, my mistake. Okay, so Court of Owls and Talon. What else?
Oh, well, come on now. It's your turn.
They've had 52 titles in 5 years.
Yeah.
So... when I start seeing them resurrecting characters, you know, for...
Red Tool.
Who's had one panel. They've had a few. My point is, why not tell the story with either new characters, or at least bring some of the other characters back in the first of 6 issues?
Yeah.
It wasn't bad, but it left me wanting.
Mr. Bloom. I'm just going to, I'm just going to spit one out.
I'm not saying they haven't created any new characters at all, but I'm saying they haven't created any new heroes as headlining for titles. And Talon, I'll grant you that maybe is the one exception. The others from Aquaman and the others, sure. You could argue the Gang of Harleys, maybe. But they've had years to really expand their universe and add to their library, and they haven't. And now with them doing derivative versions of, you know, Sugar and Spike, now the Bloodlines characters, it makes it seem like they've almost got an active plan to not expand their library, and that puzzles me. Now, from a creator point of view, I get them not wanting to do it. From a publisher's point of view, it just seems crazy.
Is there a sense, a business aspect to this where in today's contracts, new characters would have partial ownership by those creators that would get a piece of them, and these older characters, if resurrected, are already wholly owned subsidiaries of DC?
Sort of. I don't know about the full ownership aspect. That's really a contract question that somebody more in the know could answer than I could. But from what I've heard around some of the characters, say, used in Arrow and Flash on TV, the Caitlin Snow character, for instance, the royalties pay out differently because it's a derivative version. It's the second Killer Frost, not the original. And by having these as derivative versions, this isn't the original version of these characters. So the original creators don't get a full stake in it because it's not that character. Yet the new creators of the new version of the character don't get as much royalties, is my understanding, because they're derivative characters. So it definitely has some kind of a play in that respect, but I don't fully know or understand the ramifications of that.
Yeah, and I think today's contracts would be more creator friendly than yesteryear's contracts, I would guess.
I would think so, yeah.
Ask the Schuster family and the Siegel family and everybody, all the lawsuits that have been going on for years trying to get some sort of recompense and recognition for the original creators of these things. Obviously, they were not slanted very well in the favor of the creators back then. So I would say any of those products back then that were created, any of those IPs, would have less of a stake on the creator side, and therefore DC would own them more so and have less problems or less worry about royalty payouts. But, you know, I don't have all those contracts in front of me. I'm just saying from what I've seen in the news that it seems that way.
And again, from that perspective, it makes sense for the publisher to act the way they seem to be acting at DC. But if your business model is the creation and gestation of intellectual properties, you might want to create some new ones every once in a while.
Yeah, more so than they do, of course.
Yeah. So just food for thought. For me, this is a C+. What we got wasn't bad, but it certainly wasn't brilliant. And I thought it was a particularly weak start to the miniseries. And this may be something that just reads better in trade.
Yeah, I liked most of it. I thought it was interesting. It didn't blow my doors off, but I thought some of the characters were interesting. I liked Eddie a lot, and I'll probably check out another one. And I gave this a B-.
All right, cool. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Black Panther #1. It is written by... Here, I'm going to let you do the credits this time, because I think I am going to completely butcher this name.
Ta-Nehisi Coates and Brian Stelfreeze.
Stelfreeze, I might have been able to get the writer. Man, this is a new writer as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what else this writer is.
His very first comic book. He's a writer, but this is his very first comic book.
That's right. They had the stuff in the back matter about kind of this guy's history or whatever. You know, for somebody just starting... as a comic writer, I thought this guy did a terrific job. I'm sensing you're disagreeing. Interesting.
He certainly threw a lot of words out there. I thought it was crammed full of exposition and could have used an edit, but go on.
Interesting, because I felt that this issue did an excellent job of establishing the status quo for both Black Panther and Wakanda. I felt it was very accessible to new readers. I didn't think you had to know the history of Black Panther. It's all presented here. It seemed to be a very strong portrayal of the character and a good, deep understanding of kind of what's going on. It didn't feel like a cursory examination or whatever. And it's something that hopefully people who see Black Panther and like him in the Captain America Civil War movie that's coming up, this would be a good thing for them to check out after that. I mean, this gives you the sense there's clearly a history to this character in this country, but it also is, hey, you may never have heard of this, so let me tell you about it. And I like how they set up kind of the whole challenge of almost rebuilding Wakanda as the major through point, presumably, for this series. I mean, there's been a lot of turmoil in the country. Black Panther's gone through some rough times. And just, there's a number of things to deal with. And it had a sense where I felt it rang true to the past of the character, yet had kind of a new feel to it. It felt authentic's not maybe the right word, but it felt nuanced and like it had some depth to it. Not just, hey, he's got to go beat up this bad guy and let's move on. Now, to do that, was there some exposition? Yeah. Apparently you felt there was a lot more than I felt, maybe.
Oh, I just felt like it was incredibly tell, don't show throughout this issue. I could have used with much less, cut it in half with... It, you know, we also had a page intro that kind of gave you the introduction to the character and the history as well, and then we just kind of rehashed it through this really heavy-handed, I thought, storytelling. I found it super boring. I didn't enjoy it very much, and I didn't think it did really justice to a number one to get you hooked and get you excited about this character to make you want to read more. I have limited exposure to Black Panther, mostly from just Avengers books, mostly just Hickman stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I've never been that big of a fan of those. So that might have colored my my excitement going in. But still, I just really thought it fell flat.
Interesting. I think we're coming at it. Certainly, we're leaving it with very different opinions. I think going into it, we may have had very different opinions as well. I've read the last numerous Black Panther titles. Matter of fact, I may have read every title called Black Panther. I'm not going to say I read the original Black Panther stuff in whichever title that was published in back in the day, because I haven't. At least I don't think I have. Maybe I did in reprints. Anyways. So I like the character. And again, I liked how they didn't take anything for granted. Like, I already know this character and like him going in. But... It's interesting because I think we've, again, read the same thing, at least the same pages, but it's almost like we read different stories, if you know what I mean.
Feels like it.
Yeah, interesting.
And this writer is he's very accomplished. I mean, he has a book, which won countless awards. He's won MacArthur Fellowships, a National Magazine Award, a George Polk Award. He's a lauded writer, and I think... He might be a great comic book writer someday. I think this felt like a new writer trying to figure out how to write in this medium. And I don't know how strongly his editor leaned on him or if this was something they were going for with it. It did have a lot. It was steeped in history. It felt very descriptive and had a lot of stuff in it. So if that's what the whole team was going for, that's great. But it didn't work for me. And I would think that an editor would have made a little more sparse, given a little more action in there, maybe dropped us in a little bit of exciting panel stuff happening. We just got a lot of boring exposition throughout, I felt.
I guess I didn't feel it was anywhere near as boring. I felt it was covering a lot of ground. Did you read the print version or the digital?
Digital.
Okay. If you were to go, say, not the last page, but like 4 or 5 pages before it, I just want to speak momentarily to the point of how much dialogue there was. We've got one page, zero dialogue at all. So
this is 4 pages from the end?
Maybe the 5th.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, and I'm not saying you're wrong about the amount of dialogue, because I do think there are some other pages where there's a lot being said, but it's funny because it doesn't feel like it dominates the page, but there is a lot there. There are people who have soliloquies in this. So I get where you're coming from, and I don't, you know, think you're wrong necessarily, but for me, I came out of this really getting a rich sense of the state of the character and the status quo. In what we're walking into here, that it did get me excited about reading this title. So I think it's a case of, you know, different readers wanting different things out of the book, and not every book is for everybody. I mean, there are a couple of other things that I think we both read were really worked for you and not so much for me. So,
And we've hated the same book and we've loved the same book.
Yeah, exactly.
So but, we kind of do all of them, yeah.
But I think, to your point of this guy has numerous awards and stuff, clearly that means I'm right. No, I'm kidding. it'll be interesting to see what I think of this moving forward. Are you going to stick with it, or are you going to drop it?
You know, I might check back the next arc. I don't think I want to go on the journey with him as he figures out how to write for the comics. And maybe I'll check at the next arc, jumping on point, see how he's doing.
You know, you say that, but I felt whether you were, you know, we agree or disagree on the amount of exposition or whatever, I felt like this was something where the format of comics was not foreign to the writer, whereas some of the stuff I've read, the recent adaptation or whatever, leading up to the Marvel Civil War stuff, the Captain America Civil War stuff, actually, that I felt like it was almost a cut and paste, and they didn't understand the format of comics at all. So,
well, yeah, I don't know if it's that bad. I just think he's figuring it out. And I don't know if I want to wait around. I think I'll check back later.
No, and that's certainly a fair assessment. You know, if you don't want to pay for his learning curve or whatever, that's fine. I guess I just didn't, again, I didn't feel that way.
Right.
But had I could definitely see where I would say, hey, give him some time and I'll check back later. For me, despite everything you've said, I'm still going with the original, you know, rating I was going to give it of an A. I really like this. It really worked for me. I'm guessing yours is going to be a little lower.
I am at a C-, and I think this is a one that I would love to hear some of our listeners' opinions on, because that's a big gap between us.
I'm actually surprised you're only at a C-. From the way you were talking, I was expecting a little lower than that.
No. There's stuff here that is good, and it's just it didn't work for me as a comic, as a number one, as a new property to follow.
Interesting. I would definitely love to hear what the listeners have to say. Clearly, we've got a differing viewpoints on this. And again, where did everybody else kind of weigh in? Did they like it, or did it not work for them either?
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
Now, this is a mature book. This is an all-ages podcast. There's going to be a few aspects of the story we probably won't be discussing, or if we will, we're going to kind of dance around a few issues here and there.
Or so, Drew will get bleeped.
I hope that doesn't happen, because that takes time. That's a lot of editing for me, and that may, you know, influence what we review later, and I'd hate for that to happen.
He's threatening me. He's threatening me on air.
Not threatening.
You heard it.
Cause, effect, just laying it out there. When I say it's a mature title, I don't mean this is a title that's been around for a long time. This is The Fix number one. It's the first of this property. Written by Nick Spencer. We've talked about him on a number of other titles and stuff. I think we both like him. As a writer, Steve Lieber is the artist. Overall, I like the art.
Getting the team back together from Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which was one of my favorite comic runs in a long time. So having that creative team together on this, it was a no-brainer for me to check this out.
Yeah, and certainly worth checking out. But, I mean, there are definitely aspects of this issue which are just not material for discussion in polite company. And there are aspects of it that struck me more as less than mature audience members might really like it versus, you know, the more mature and sophisticated. In other words, there's some lowbrow humor here. And there are a couple of places where it's a bit crass and kind of off color, particularly whenever the Donovan character is there.
The movie producer? Oh, yeah. My. Yes. That was when I knew you and I were going to have very different ideas about this book. Well, when he came on and
started talking,
and I thought, oh, God. John hates this book.
I wouldn't go that far, but there were a couple of scenes where it's like, you know, there's a page or two here that just, I don't need to be here. You know, I don't need for those pages to be there, I guess would be the way to put it. Fair amount of profanity and other not all ages material kind of stuff sprinkled
through. Sexual situations.
Yeah. And it's stuff that, frankly, I didn't feel necessarily added to the story. For me, it detracted. And there were other things that were done here that I thought were just great. So I've got a little bit of this where I really love parts of this issue. I really didn't care for other parts. Now, one of the things I didn't really care for, but it's a little bit of a hot button issue for me and not something that I think most people would even, you know, blink at or whatever, is near the end, they are talking with, hang on, I've got a PDF version of this. I have it on order, but it hasn't shipped yet for me. So I think maybe DCBS either just got shorted a little or whatever. They're talking with Josh, and yeah. There's this whole thing of, hey, you don't have any gluten allergies, do you? And they just kind of first off, the two leads are clearly intimidated and scared of this guy. And he's like, oh, no, just kidding. I mean, no gluten in this. What kind of human do you think I am or whatever? That's the kind of dialogue that makes me question if the writer knows anything about gluten allergies and situations or whatever. And that it's thrown in for, quote unquote, realism.
Well, he's saying he would never serve anything with gluten in it, right?
Yeah. And somebody saying that, it's like, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah. And certainly not something you would be worried about with kale chips.
But the juxtaposition of him not even fathoming serving anything with gluten in it, but yet also jabbing somebody's eye out with a poker.
Yeah.
The next panel is a funny juxtaposition to me.
Absolutely. And I think that was the point of it. And I'm okay with that. But as somebody who is, you know, gluten-free, not by choice, but out of necessity, again, a little bit of a you know, hot button issue for me at times. This to me really showed that Spencer's a very talented writer. The book was going along one way, and then when the police call comes in, throws it for a really sharp kind of left turn there, and it's like, okay, this is cool. I'm entertained by this. And then just some of the stuff they do in the that Spencer does in the writing, it's clever. There's a lot of other aspects of the book that limit the audience for this, which is a shame because, again, this whole cop-thief dichotomy here that is being explored certainly would be interesting. I mean, it is applicable to a wider audience, and a lot of people are going to be turned off by certain aspects of the book. Not saying he was wrong to put all of that in there, but it does limit the audience.
And it's great to see Steve Lieber doing his thing again. His visual sight gags are great. If you enjoyed them in Superior Foes, you'll catch a lot of those here. The inset, the reaction shot, you know, the speed drawing of like a flame shooting out from behind a guy's feet is because he's running so fast. You know, he's just very clever, and I love his cartooning style, and it's super solid on, you know, it's very realistic in one panel and then very cartoony in another, and it really helps tell the story, and they work incredibly well together.
Oh, absolutely. There were a couple of things that, because the art is telling the story that was being written, it pulled off, and there were certain things where definitely being set up to believe one thing, and then we get kind of that reveal or whatever.
Yeah.
And those, I mean, again, the final page ends on one of those, and it's like, wow, that was just really artfully done, both again in the writing and in the actual drawing. And it's like, you know, it's cinematic in many respects. It plays, I mean, I can see this playing on a TV or movie screen kind of a thing in my mind. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel contrived. It's just, it was, again, the two guys work really well together, and they're telling the same story and telling it very effectively.
Yeah, sometimes there's comics that come along and we think, man, this person is dusting off their screenplay. You know, they obviously have a failed movie pilot here that they didn't work for Hollywood, so they're pulling this out on and putting it on a comic. And sometimes we get a comic that I think is tailor-made to be a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem forced. It just seems like that would elevate it to another level if this could be filmed. And that's what I feel here. I think these guys, the chemistry that they have, the two cops, that they're great, and they work well together. And it's got a humor and an action and it's got heist stuff in it. And it's just tailor-made for the big screen. And I think this would be just an awesome property to do that with. I love this debut. I thought it was fantastic. Definitely an R-rated movie at this point. Without any edits. So it's pretty hardcore. Yeah, you know that going in and you're okay with that. It's great stuff.
I don't think I had realized the mature, reader's aspect going in. Not saying it's a problem. It's just a little surprising to me. That having been said, I completely agree. This is not something that felt like it was a repurposed screenplay or anything of the sort. It very naturally is a comic book, but one that cries out to be translated into movie, TV, whatever. And certainly this would make, so far, a great movie. I mentioned TV because it's characters and a concept that just seems to have so much potential, as we've seen executed here, that I'd like to see more than just a movie. It just seems like a very unique take on kind of the buddy cop formula.
Yeah, unless it's HBO, I don't want to see it on TV.
I wouldn't want it watered down, and yeah. It could be Netflix.
Yeah. You
know, there are venues for this sort of a thing now. Yeah. And it's, again, it's intelligently written, which does not surprise me at all. And again, the art is just a perfect match and blend for this. That, again, while there are certain parts I just didn't care for and didn't think added to the story, there were so many things about it that I enjoyed. That, you know, again, when they're talking to the guy who's a, you know, cold-blooded killer, but he's acting all, you know, nice and whatever. You know, there was a tangible dynamic there on the page that was a lot of fun.
And then the differences between new crime and new criminals and old criminals and the type of crimes that are – I thought that was brilliant. The fact that you can't even steal a guy's watch anymore because – once it's off his wrist, it's useless. You know, banks don't carry enough cash. There's really, you can't hit that anymore. Everything's virtual and bitcoins. So these old school crime guys, they don't get it. They're not with it, and they can't compete in today's crime world. And that was just something I hadn't seen before, and I thought that was just great.
Well, and that's the thing. It's something we hadn't seen before. Spencer took an idea, ran with it. It's a very clever idea. He explained it well. The way the comic opened set the scene well. I mean, again, we get the old school criminals. I mean, are they a dying breed? Are they not? How life has changed for them. And then it goes and zigs and zags a bit, yet not in a what the heck just happened, but in a wow, that's clever. I didn't see that coming. But this is cool. Let's go with this. You know, it covered enough ground in this issue to have a very satisfying, fulfilling amount of story for me. Even, like I said, if there are a couple of pages I could have just chucked because I didn't care for, you know, they were there for color, for, you know, expanding the world or whatever you want to call it. But there was also so much there on just a couple of other scenes and other pages that I was happy with that. And if you were not turned off by some of these things like I was, there's even more for you to have here. So to me, this is definitely a strong number one. I want to see where they go with this. If this doesn't get adapted into live action of some sort, most likely a movie, I would be surprised by that. It's certainly something that if you get the right actors involved, even for some of the smaller parts, you need to find the right people. And I don't think it'd be hard to do. But if you can get the people that have the right chemistry and can do justice to this material, it would do really well.
Yeah, this to me is Scorsese and Goodfellas. And for me, that is not faint praise. It had that kind of authenticity, that kind of look at a level of society and that kind of humor, dark humor, and it was really well crafted and a fantastic debut. And you know, I saw it coming. I saw kernels of this in Superior Foes, and knew I loved it, and knew I loved those guys working together. But this them just kind of taking an idea and running with it, at least for an issue, you know, this issue was close to perfect for me. Even with the language and the imagery that it had in it, I give it an A+.
Interesting. I'm not surprised. I can definitely see where you're coming from on that. For me, again, some of the language, some of the imagery, and the fact that it didn't seem to be fundamentally required in my mind for the story. I can't give it that A+, but again, this is a creative team that's working really well together, telling a very interesting story. It had good characters, some good dialogue, a couple of clever ideas, some places where I just was laugh out loud funny for me, just because of some of the twists and turns and stuff like that. So for me, it's definitely an A comic. I sensed from you question if they can maintain that in future issues. I'm not really concerned with that. I think this team, expect the future issues to be of similar quality.
No, I'm not. I just said I can only judge on this issue.
Oh, that's fair. Okay.
I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but this one is great. It's also got some Better Call Saul in there. I mean, it's really, it's just really top notch stuff, man. And, I'm giving other medium examples, but it's just, I was really impressed and happy to have read it, and definitely a pull list and something that I am not going to miss an issue of.
I've got the next issue pre-ordered. Again, despite loving it, there were a couple of things. It's like, what direction are they going to go? So I'll probably keep pre-ordering for a little bit, but if it gets a little bit more kind of crass and off color than I feel I need to be reading or want to be reading, I may not continue with it. But
unless they kill off the movie producer, I think you're in for some more.
to me, it's not a matter of it's got to be gone entirely. There were enough other things in this issue that while I didn't care for the movie producer scene, I really enjoyed the rest of it, the rest of it.
Yeah.
So if it's got a good enough balance, it's like, fine, it's got some of this indulgence. To me, it was gratuitous and indulgent.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was good enough. It's like, fine, whatever.
And that scene is kind of like bad Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was probably a good way to
describe it. Crass just for crassness sake sometimes. But I have to admit I laughed out loud. So what does that say about me?
Nothing good. That's all I'm going to say there. So I've...
You're all caught up.
I wish. if it hadn't been for the editing of the preview spotlight, we had just a ton of clips this time. It was it was an over 2-hour episode.
Great.
I think aside from episode 100, this set another record for the number of clips we got. So again, totally awesome. I thought that was great. Good problem to be having. Certainly not complaining about that, but that did eat into time I might have otherwise spent reading. But hey,
thank you for editing my clip for me. Appreciate that. Going the extra mile.
Hey, I listen through the clips. I bump up the audio when somebody accidentally includes the previous two clips they'd sent in the one. It's like, yeah, I'll cut that out. you know, it's again, I'd rather not have to do that. Don't get me wrong, but I'm happy to do it just so we get a good episode. And again, ton of great clips coming in this time. I added a few things to my order, which is a shame because it was already huge.
Yeah, this is going to be a huge order for me. I've already done a preliminary DCBS order, and with the Rebirth stuff and the Rebirth variant stuff, I want to check those out, and big order for me.
I wound up with a couple of big ticket items in the back, so that bumps it up. So I'm still trying to catch up. I've still got some stuff from the last couple of weeks, but I did read a few other things from this week.
Sure.
Archie, number 7, enjoyed that. Thought that was some great stuff. I'm continuing to be hooked on that title. Black Widow, number 2, that gave a little bit of insight as to what was going on after the first issue and stuff. Really enjoyed that a lot. That was good. Injustice Gods Among Us, year 5. It's two of the digital installments. One of them I thought was fairly good. The other one I thought was amazing.
So where are you at? What issues are those?
That was issue... I don't have my list in front of me.
I'm on 7. 16 digitally.
It would have been then probably 13 and 14, I think, because it's cheaper. Okay. And it was 7.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. I mean, I still prefer the Tom Taylor stuff, but I think these guys have got it. they figured it out, and it's right. It's much stronger than it was year four. I think year five is much better.
It ended on the whole thing was about Damien.
Yeah.
And just the line it ended on, both who gave it and what it was, and just what it said about so many characters. I loved it. Read the second issue of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Thought that was some great stuff. I think both New Avengers number 9 and Uncanny Avengers number 8, both of that tying into the Assault on Pleasant Hill stuff. Really enjoying the concept and some of the execution behind that a lot. Read the third issue of Superman Coming of the Supermen. Talk about a book that I don't think an editor is what's needed. I think a counselor is what's needed. Neil Adams is just getting a little, I don't say aggressive in his storytelling.
Well, he's aggressive in his Comic-Con booth. So that makes sense. Guy wants $30 for a signature. Please.
You know, if some of these characters could reach out and grab me while I'm reading it, I think they would. it's fun. It's good, but it could be sedated or toned down just a little. Think Tank, Creative Destruction number 1. We get that series back. It had some really cool stuff.
Is that just Hawkins, or is he co-writing with somebody?
I think it was just Hawkins.
Okay.
I would have to double check.
I know he's got a few that he co-writes and then kind of hands off the reins to somebody else sometimes. I think Think Tank is his baby.
I think that's his baby. And it's one of those that some of the stuff they have in the back matter of just, hey, here's some of the research you did that we might enjoy. Some of it I may actually go chase down and learn a little bit more about, because some of it was just, you know.
Those URLs are so long.
He's telling some interesting stories, and the basis of reality as the touch point is just a little scary.
Yeah.
What else? That was a lot of what I read.
Walking Dead was good.
Trying to think if I got to, I don't know if I got to that one or not.
Can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
It's too spoilerific.
I don't think I did get to that one yet. There's a bunch of, I've got most of this week that I just haven't read yet, and most of last week at about quarter of the week before that. I'm trying to get caught up. It's just
Ryan Ottley's Grizzly Shark number 1. I wouldn't bother.
Not on the list to read.
I think that's probably wise.
It just seems like even with only about 3 weeks of you know, this in the past two, that there's still a couple of titles I've got like 2 issues to be reading or something. It's one thing when they're weekly or whatever, but some of the stuff's coming out every other week. Which, yeah, isn't a problem, but it does make it hard to stay current.
I'm jumping on Vision as soon as we're done with this, because I was going to read that earlier, and I just didn't get around to it, but it's one of those that I love and can't wait to get to.
If I'd had more time, Walking Dead, Vision, and probably Rough Riders would have been some of the other ones I would have done.
Did you check out Empress yet?
I've got it. I haven't read it.
I haven't read it yet either.
Yeah, again, I've still got maybe a dozen or so from 2 weeks ago. Probably about 30 maybe from last week. And then, again, probably about 2 dozen, maybe a little over from this week.
Mm-hmm.
So if I spend some time this weekend reading, I stand a chance of catching up. But I think next week is going to be just a huge shipment. Hence the I should spend time reading.
So let's see. Previews comes out tomorrow, but when this comes out, it will have come out last Wednesday, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then you'll be recording Mayo Reports with Sam and TJ already. You've already done that by the time they listen to this.
I will have we're recording this on, let's see, the 12th of April. And I'm recording on Thursday with Sam. I haven't actually checked signals with Sam and TJ yet.
Okay.
The plan is to record Thursday with Sam and then hopefully Monday with TJ, but that depends on their availability, etc. Things are a little more chaotic than usual because they sent the top 10 list on Friday from Diamond, and I replied with a question and got this person no longer works at Diamond. So they had some turnover there, and just whenever that happens, one or two things get kind of, you know, dropped through the cracks. So I actually didn't get the full data set until late Monday afternoon.
Numbers look interesting, so I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah, there was some interesting stuff. And if people have questions, and at any point, you know, we've got the threads on the forum, and we're happy to take questions on those episodes and such. Go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead. That's fine.
Let's say it does have me wondering how Rebirth is going to do and a few things like that. It's just the oversized issue 50s at DC, followed by 2 months and then new number ones and stuff. It's just it's an odd dynamic over at DC.
Yeah, it should be interesting. But I think the online solicits are going to start trickling out here pretty soon. I see you've posted for the May previews, correct?
I've put the thread up. Yes.
You put the thread up. Yeah.
I always put the thread up, for the next previews as I am editing and posting the previous preview spotlight. That way I set the dates for, the teleconference. So we're doing the comic book page teleconference on April 30th. The next deadline for the next preview spotlight will be, May 7th. And of course the next previews is coming out April 27th. Which coincidentally is when orders are going to be due for DCBS for the current previews. So, yeah. Tons of stuff going on.
The cycle continues.
That's part of why I stay behind on my reading.
And we have been getting suggestions on the Weekly Comic Spotlight forum thread for future review titles to review. We appreciate that. Not going to say that they're all going to get chosen, but we do appreciate when you guys make suggestions. Sometimes it just depends on if we're reading it or not. And sometimes we can get review copies, sometimes we can't. And sometimes something else bubbles up that we're both really geeked to read.
Absolutely,
and review.
Yeah. The way we do that, just to get a little behind the curtains or whatever, so people can know the timing to make suggestions, we record every Tuesday night. So right now, April 12th, we're recording this episode, obviously. We have already picked what we're going to be doing for next week. And then just this evening, right before recording this, we picked what we're doing for 2 weeks out. So the episode that goes up on the 20th covering the releases of the 20th. No, hang on. What goes up on the 25th covering the releases of the 20th. That makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Is what we've already picked. So what we do is we go to the Diamond website. Anything, usually on Mondays, they post the this week stuff and the upcoming releases. We use the upcoming releases list to kind of pick what we're going to do 2 weeks out. Yeah. And then every time when we record, we solidify what we're doing 2 weeks out, confirm that we're getting the stuff in my DCBS shipment and stuff like that for next week, adjust if we feel we need to, and go from there.
Yeah. Not to say it's not that it's set in stone. We have swapped things out at the last minute before because of a late release or something got bumped or whatever. So,
or we just realized, oh, we should have done this instead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I like the suggestions. So I think that's cool. Just don't get your feelings hurt if we go another way every once in a while.
And I really appreciate a lot of the traffic we're getting on the Weekly Comics Spotlight thread on the forum. I forget which listener, so forgive me for not attributing it to the right person, but got some interesting feedback on the X-Men 92 comic we reviewed last week.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, according to that listener, it was supposed to be a parody. That was lost on me entirely. And it's like a stand-up comedian doing an impression of himself.
Yeah, you don't get, yeah.
They're just talking. This is Marvel doing a parody of the X-Men, but they're just the X-Men at that point. I don't know. It was interesting, and again, different perspective. I always enjoy hearing that. And again, like to hear that on Black Panther, since
it still doesn't make that book any better.
No, it does not make X-Men 92 any better. Few things can do that, and I think most of them require time travel at this point. It didn't work for me. If it worked for somebody else, that's awesome. Again, not everything is for everybody, but I think I'm a bit of a pushover when it comes to Marvel superhero titles.
Yeah, or, if it doesn't win you over, my goodness.
Yeah, so we'll see. So like I said, if you guys have suggestions, they're certainly not binding commitments on our part by any means, but we're happy to get suggestions, because sometimes, I'll be honest, I look at the list and say, I don't know what to pick.
Yeah, and read Bloodlines, Black Panther, and Fix number ones, and give us your grades. And make fun of my grades or make fun of John's grades, more likely. You should really do that.
Yeah. If you do post on the forum about that, and I would love that. If you're going to do spoilers, we have a spoiler tag on the forum, so you can prevent spoiling stuff for other people. That's always appreciated. Do keep in mind, it's not only an all-ages podcast, it's an all-ages website, so there are going to be certain things on the fix that maybe shouldn't you be might discussed.
Just give that a letter grade. No explanation needed.
Yeah, certainly not details or specific quotes from the book. How about that? So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Batman Superman number 31 from DC, Moon Knight number 1 from Marvel, and Black Road number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.